I said, what you know about it?
It's the stew, baby.
Got the mise en place.
Young stew, baby.
And the room a lot.
Hello, hello. You are listening to the Stew Food Podcast that we do.
The wedding episode.
It's the infamous wedding episode, the one you thought would never come out. Yeah, it's out. I'm Jason Stewart.
Hey, hello.
Andre Conaparo, say hello.
Hello, listeners. Did that last voice sound familiar?
Stewie.
A ghost of Indian food past has come to visit us on the food podcast.
Call me the Friday night special.
Ghost of Indian food pass. What up, Stewie?
Hi, guys.
Cheers.
Hey.
We missed you.
I brought Rosa. I missed y'all, too.
What up, Stewie?
I'm back.
I missed. Right, if we're going to yell, let's do a step back from the mic.
Oh, were we peeking there? Sorry.
Just like if you're Mariah at the end of this episode, when you hit the high notes, move the mic a few inches away from your mouth.
What about Mariah in the Washington Wizards jersey or dress thing?
Well, after that spiel, that's the last time I'm ever going to raise my voice on this goddamn show. Right. Jesus Christ.
I was excited about the Rosa.
Yeah, we're all Stewie's here. He's getting married.
Hey, I hate to be the disciplinarian.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Let's edit this.
Someone's got to check all these levels and make sure that our listeners.
Do you still listening, Stewie?
Is that what you do?
Do you want your mom's ears to get blasted on her earbuds?
I don't know why you got to sweep the leg and just bring up moms all of a sudden right off the bat.
I want to hit you where it hurts.
Hey, moms.
Baby, you're stronger than that.
Hi, moms.
Also, dudes, just anybody listening to this who's not a mom.
We're sorry.
We hope that your ears are good. So,
we had a moment. That's gone now.
Yeah, I'm getting married. If you're listening to this, I'm married, basically. Yeah, if you're listening, I'm married. Yeah, whoa.
That's true. Yeah, that's
Jesus
right.
Christ.
Saturday morning, baby.
You got married yesterday, bitch.
Oh, God. Sober as the day I was born.
So, I mean,
sober as a gopher?
I'm your brother, and I'm feeling stressed out by it. I'm feeling anxiety.
Yeah, me
what?
Too.
What?
It's channeling through me, so I can only imagine what's going on in your body.
I mean, the last time I felt like this is like when we did a pop-up. It's just like so much going on, except
weddings are kind of like a pop-up restaurant, but for relationships. For our listeners at home, I know you guys are like foodies and stuff like that. Just want to explain what a wedding might be.
Marriage is forever. The wedding is like 6 hours, and it's a lot of stuff and orchestration, which is actually fairly analogous to doing the pop-up. Which is
you're
getting
an orchestra?
I will. I will. A quintet.
There's a lot. There's a lot of moving parts. Is what we're saying. We gotta get the guy who's gonna release the doves, the guy or girl. It could be either one. Stuff like that.
Once again. My friend Brandon will be the ring bearer. He's usually serving food at our pop-ups, but he will be the ring bearer.
Sick.
Breaking news. I have a 30-year-old man as a ring bearer.
Sick.
Yeah.
What do you mean by ring bearer when you say that?
Maybe he's going to hand us the rings.
Mm-hmm. Sounded like something that was like a code word for something.
No.
I got a ring bearer at home. He's 30.
Pretty cute. Like a leather daddy?
Sure.
Okay.
Your words, not mine.
Oh, well, you
keep it in the closet.
TallTalesPodcast.com is the website. This one is done.
Look, I'm rusty.
We're just balls of emotion right now, and that's okay. What's happened since last week? Coachella happened last week in your restaurant, Bad Mash.
Bad Mash.
I heard was everyone's fave in terms of the food that week.
Oh,
I heard a lot of you guys were serving the chicken tiki masala poutine.
Tikka
masala poutine.
Chicken tiki poutine.
And I saw that on the top of a lot of guides to best food to eat at Coachella list.
Very sick.
Get it next week.
Various friends I saw tweeting about it was the best thing to eat there, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe they got paid. I don't know.
That's not from us. So, and a lot of people came through because of it. I saw the past two nights a lot of Coachella wristbands.
Very cool.
Interesting synergy at play.
Like for next weekend,
which is so that's kind of a testament to just how good the food is. Because if I'm at Coachella, it's 100 degrees. It's 3 p.m. I'm sweating like a whore in church. You know, the ecstasy is wearing off. What have you? the sun's beating down on you. The last thing I really feel like putting in my mouth is a big old thing of Indian food poutine, you know?
I actually could not agree more. but I really can't sell it. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess if you're hand-boned or you're rolling and I need some food in my tummy, like maybe, you want that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my
so favorite. So I get it, actually.
The, whatchamacallit, the sushi place that does the hand rolls.
Downtown?
Last year, their first year, right?
Sugarfish related.
Yeah,
what's it called?
Kazunori.
Kazunori.
They were my fave Coachella food.
That makes perfect sense.
Mm.
And we were next to a musubi spot. I was like, solicitors at wherever you are, because it's on your phone.
For listeners at the gym.
I wasn't there because I've never been to Coachella and I have no desire to ever.
It's my version of tiki masala.
Ever
fries.
Go to Coachella? So I held it down, much like I did last year.
So is it
for
one of those
Lawrence.
Things where like yeah. you've gone on this far, so you might as well just never go?
I don't want to go. I've never wanted to go. That's it.
I know, but like, there's. I have a lot of things like that where yeah. like, if I have not done something for a long period of time, then it's more amusing to me to just never do it ever again than to enjoy doing it, kind of thing.
That's how I am with the Fast series. I've never seen a Fast and Furious movie, not one.
Oh, really?
Good. And I love them. I love action movies. You know, that's my genre of choice. My go-to.
Horrible.
But I've never seen it.
I have that for McDonald's.
What?
When I went vegetarian in. When I was 14, I proclaimed that I'm not going to go to McDonald's ever again. Still never been?
Hey, do you know what? Dude, same. I've never done it. At post vegetarianism, I haven't been to McDonald's.
You're all crazy.
I can't stand it. I think it's disgusting.
I think it's disgusting too, but I've definitely had chicken nuggies like somewhere like on the road having a hard time. I'd rather eat chicken nuggets from McDonald's than a Subway sandwich.
Ooh, that's a toss.
So gross.
Yeah.
Both are disgusting.
I have fonder memories of the Italian sandwich at Subway.
Keep it as a memory, playboy.
Yeah, I am. I haven't been.
So gross.
You know, years
well, that's the that's the problem with the Subway. When we were kids,
we had a lot of it.
Now,
oh my God, Veggie Delight?
Horrible.
No mayo?
So many Veggie Delights with avo.
But also, I just love the smell. The Subway bread smell. I know
we were
like
talking about that.
Kind of an acrid.
We were having ice cream at that new place in Atwater next to a Subway, and you were talking about how you like the smell. And I always said, I think the smell on its own, if I had never heard it before, would be fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, heard it, smelled it before, or eaten Subway, but because I have an association with Subway, it's not an offensive odor on its own. It's that it makes me think of how gross Subway is when I smell it.
It has the...
It's a bread smell. It's not that bad.
The sense memory
I agree.
Is strong.
Of the grossest turkey sandwich ever made on the earth. The
problem is that it's not a bread smell. It's a manufactured smell.
Right. Well, somewhere in between, right?
Yeah. It's just like...
I
wouldn't be surprised if they put little essence drops in their AC and pumped it out.
Oh, I see.
Because you could
saying.
Smell it from the outside. It's like, well, there's not really like a boulangerie. And it's like,
yeah.
It's like they're pumping that shit
just
out.
Saying they bake it fresh, though. Maybe we need to get somebody who used to work for Subway on the
podcast.
And
I'm sure they just...
If they do bake them.
I'm sure they have...
But that smell is too pungent.
Get like a delivery of frozen bread logs every day, and then they just...
No, I think they literally like... They have like the mix. They put it in like a...
No
big.
Way!
I'm almost positive.
Every Subway has a big ass Hobart mixer.
They got a big Hobart. They got a thing.
They'd be endlessly easier to do it yourself than to buy. Like the storage of all
the
those
size
loaves is
still,
insane.
Yeah. But I think we should put it out to the listeners. Anybody here used to work for Subway that wants to come on? We can disguise your voice, and you want to put Subway on blast? Please hit us up because I want to hear those stories.
I agree.
I also agree with that.
Yeah, I don't know anybody, but there's got to be somebody out there.
We've had friends who've worked at Subway before. I think I just read something about them like offering some kind of like unpaid like child labor thing going on. Like you could work there as an unpaid intern.
Okay.
Oh. If you're a minor kind of thing.
Oh, that's weird.
If you wanted to apprentice as a sandwich artist, is that what you're trying to tell me?
Oh, so you can fast track yourself when you turn 15 to get in there? Well, I mean, after the Jared scandal, I think their stock dipped. So. For real.
Which is why they try to get even younger people.
I saw a free Jared shirt.
Dark. Who would do that?
Dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also like 3 years ago, Subway had that scandal where they had... a chemical. They announced that they're removing the chemical that's found in yoga mats from their bread recipe.
Yeah, but then they did a story on NPR about how that's just like, that's just an example of mass produced, like, you know, like, that those kinds of ingredients are in all kinds of food that, you know, not that we eat, but, you know, there's all kinds of processed food using ingredients that, like, crosses over multiple industries, whether it's like automotive or
Subway's not the only offender.
No. That was just a total, somebody caught onto it and then a Facebook page and then
just
went
how
from there.
Just how United isn't the only shitty airline.
That's true.
Oh, that's very true.
I mean, I did ask a guy that does.
Did you guys hear about that? There's like a guy that got dragged off a plane. Like a United flight?
Nope.
Something about it.
No?
Yeah. So I knew a guy that took away the grease at Burger Lord's.
Sick.
And I asked him
the grease.
Well, you know, you got a grease guy.
Yeah, well, I actually have like three grease guys on deck.
Must be nice.
What do you think their phones look like? Do you think there's a thin layer of film on the phone?
They all have otters, you know.
Oh yeah,
like, otter cases.
Otter cases. Sure. Yeah, yeah. Like the heavy.
Not like ones. Not like the gay thing.
Oh, or the animal.
Or they just all otter. If you're the kind of guy who's in the grease trap removal biz, and you're like, I have a pet otter, I would say, sounds about right.
Yeah, they're all very nice, but stinky.
Otters or grease guys?
Either one,
the greaseman.
I asked him
what he did with the grease. And he's like, you'd be surprised, all the things that they're in, but mostly it gets put into asphalt and tarmac and things like that.
There's so
much used grease in our streets and pavement.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So there you go. It goes both ways.
So funny that they say don't dump the grease or the oil because it'll drain into the...
Wait a minute.
Drain into the gutters and then into the ocean.
But
the fucking gutters are made out of it.
Are you still vegan if you drive on top of asphalt?
That is oil.
Fossil fuel.
That's been used to fry chicken with.
Are you still vegan if you drive, period, and use gasoline that's fossil fuel? That's dead animals, bro.
My argument was more fun to talk about.
Oh, yeah, right. Vegan people have to fly.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. By, like, flapping their wings.
Yeah.
Not on a plane.
Yeah.
Methane gas.
Hang glide, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The new hard line.
That's right.
Not driving on animal-used oil asphalt.
Or, in an ironic twist, the only way to be vegan is to walk on grass.
Just kill yourself.
Do you remember when there was like vegan people listeners who would say like they don't walk on grass?
Yeah,
and I don't remember
that. That one's.
I heard that, and fruitarians were always my favorite.
Well, the people who own Michael's Diner in Berkeley, which was a famous old vegan, like 50s diner style place, that had the best fried chicken sandwich ever. The whole family was fruitarians.
Didn't they have like black teeth essentially?
Yeah, I mean they did not look healthy.
And wasn't Steve Jobs a fruitarian or something like that?
I don't know.
No, he looks regular. Maybe that's how he passed away.
No, I heard that was like, well, I think he was a fruitarian for a while or something similar to that, and then like
we should explain fruitarians to the listeners.
Fruitarians are people who only eat fruit that has fallen off the tree.
Not picked.
Exactly.
Not picked. God has used its gravitational pull.
Is there a religious aspect? There's not a religious aspect.
I think there's one religion.
I was just saying, like, by
does...
the only way is
by gravity.
Our Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, has plucked that plum.
I think they
placed it on the lawn.
Really strict Buddhists that only eat fruits that have fallen. I think even in the newest Chef's Table, she mentions some people that. Know how they avoid picking them and just
that
wait for the ones
Korean
that
lady?
Fall. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's a good one.
She's great.
She's great. Well, I've got some notes here.
Fire away.
Do it.
I was just, we just have a whole barrage of weird things. Speaking of vegetarian stuff, have you guys seen people whipping garbanzo bean juice?
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
I just recently saw that. Like, well, they
it's an emulsifier.
Yeah, so like when you get a can of garbanzos and you drain it out, that liquid, you can whip it into a non-dairy vegetarian
for like foams,
legume-based, like it basically looks like whipped cream when you whip it, and you can use that and like fold it into cakes and other baking things. Like
more
that.
So that even like molecular gastronomy because it's such a strong. Like a high level of proteins that it's
mm-hmm.
that it won't break down.
What would you use that for?
I mean, I guess
if you were going to do something cool with it, Stewie.
I don't know, you put it in what are those called?
Like a soufflé?
No, the canisters that are charged with CO2. Like,
oh, right, right, right.
You do like you just a, use that. Just use like that foam? For a foam. Yeah, just shake it up. Use it for foam, like chef table tip. It's like, I'm sure they have a recipe with it on chef table.
But then you're going to
have... Or chef step, sorry, not chef table.
Chef
step.
You're going to have a chef step. Always like, ooh, what is this canisters? Foam? And it just tastes like garbanzo beans? What would you do to it?
I mean, it's such a... The juice itself is...
Pretty natural.
It's not neutral, but it doesn't just, like, scream garbanzo. I mean, it is...
Well, it depends on how much sodium's in it, because it varies from, like, definitely from bean to bean. Like,
I scream garbanzo.
But I think it's kind of neutral. I mean, like, because sometimes...
Fairly.
I think it's a tight-ass thing that I want to explore.
Well, it's like, what else are you going to do with it? So it's like...
That's why I'm asking
you. I love when there's no food waste and... So you can reuse that juice for something.
So you're going nose to tail in a can of garbanzos.
Always, I swear to God, it's for real. when I made hummus at home, I would save that juice because I would need water anyway. So I might as well use the concentrated water that came in the can.
Yeah, there's so much sodium. Whatever.
I buy the. That's crazy. I don't buy the sodium. I get the plainest garbanzos.
Yeah, that's like when you're pouring out the can of tomatoes to make the sauce, and then you run it under the water, and
I mean, you could use that to make a stock with. If you want to make a vegetable stock,
I think it'd be great. It's a great base. Mm. It's just so rich.
Mm-hmm. It is very rich,
which is okay. You can cut it, add more water, you can thin it out.
Yeah, but not wasting. It's great. I like that idea.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. That Bourdain has this whole series coming out next that he's trying to. He's like doing a Kickstarter for about all the food waste in everybody's home, just everybody overbuying and just trashing. People are just pissing away their money and natural resources. So,
okay,
yeah,
that's true.
That's next. And the weird laws they have for grocery stores not being able to give away their old fruits and vegetables and meats and things to the homeless shelters.
Oh yeah. That's the really bad stuff. That's
super depressing. Yeah. Hi guys.
I was listening to an interview with Wolfgang Puck on the Eater podcast, which is not good, but I still listen to it. I have to hate all other podcasts. No offense to you, Eater. Shout outs to Eater.
Shout outs to Eater.
and Wolfgang Puck, he opened Cut, his steakhouse restaurant in New York recently, and it's been getting
I didn't know that.
It's been getting shit on the reviews.
Really?
Which as it kind of should be, because
the LA one.
The LA Cut is notoriously overpriced for what you get.
I take it there's a Vegas one too, right? There's got to be a Vegas Cut.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, there's
like a million.
But he's got a million Wolfgang.
He's got one. Yeah. He's got a cut in Vegas, New York, London, Dubai, probably one in China as well. Yeah. But the thing they were bringing up, like Pete Wells shit on it, and the guy from Eater gave it a bad review as well, and Wolfgang Puck was just kind of like, these guys don't know shit. Like he was like really coming out and swinging. Like, oh, the guy from Eater, what's his name? He was reviewing it. Like, he doesn't know anything about food. He's just an amateur. I know more about food than he does, and I know it tastes good. And he doesn't know what he's talking about. And it was so cool to see. It was kind of like when you see like an interview with Clint Eastwood or something like that, and he just doesn't care what he's saying anymore because he's old and a millionaire.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of that going on, not without the racism and the crazy, crazy old grandpa vibe.
Having not heard this, I'm so surprised because every time I've heard him talk, I'm always so impressed about like how modest and understated he is as a person.
Super measured.
So maybe he just lost it. But I mean,
he wasn't like yelling or going crazy, but he was just kind of calmly, matter-of-factly saying like, these guys don't know what they're talking about.
It's also the argument of, you know, critics versus people who create, artists, filmmakers, musicians, and then critics, and that back and forth conversation of
pitchfork.
Who are you to judge when you don't create yourself, or is the only judge the one that doesn't create, so they have no bias for the process, that it's truly the experience.
I mean, love it.
It's a back and forth conversation. But I will say what he's doing, or at least I've eaten a cut a few times in L.A. and never because I wanted to go or would pay for it. Mm-hmm. But it was very
Morris related.
It's very straightforward food.
Right.
Like in a way that like it is, if there's anything that is kind of easily judgeable or reviewable. I mean, you look at the varying reviews of Baru and most people loved it. But the people who didn't and the detractors were like, oh, yeah, sure. Like what you wrote about Baru that's not the restaurant you should ever eat at.
Right. Yeah.
But if you're just making really overpriced Wagyu steak and serving like a side of sauteed morels and a $3,000 bottle of wine, like you're not really swinging for the fences in far of like really asking people to engage something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, sure, I bet that it sucks then.
And you're really opening yourself up to criticism from a much broader group.
Well, look, it also, you know, you put yourself with a crosshair on your back when you charge as much as they do.
Exactly.
And that's another part of it too. Like if it was reasonably priced and, you know, in a place where it's like, I don't know, they were really trying to do value for what you're eating, which is the opposite and not the point, and that's fine. Those restaurants aren't for me, and I understand that people sometimes just want to spend a lot of money in regards to the quality of the food, trying to impress people, whatever it is. But it's not like they're not trying to give you value. They're just trying to make you feel exclusive and special and privileged, and that's like an experience that is not for it's not about the food,
right? And that and they kind of talked a little bit more about the changing of the guard of that style of cooking versus a new, more modern style where it's a little more technique and imaginative and based cooking. And he was saying like, People want luxury ingredients that are prepared well and simply done, and there's always going to be a market for that, as opposed to a really funky thing that costs a lot of money. But if you work in the biz and you know how much it costs to buy all these ingredients and prepare it, then you know that there's not the same value as like here's a Wagyu steak that costs $150 and you've been to a butcher and know how much it costs, and that makes sense, versus I'm charging you $28 for this shrimp cocktail or something, you know. So we were talking about that, and another thing that Wolfgang was saying, he brought up Alma.
Really?
As an example of the restaurant type where it costs a lot of money, but you're not getting luxurious ingredients. So that's what. So he thought that's why it closed. He's like, I don't think Alma's bad. I thought the food was good, but he thinks the reason why they closed down after a year after being voted the best restaurant by Bon Appetit was because you go there, you spend $125 for a tasting menu. For you and your girlfriend, you buy a bottle of wine, and then by the time you get out of there with tax and tip, you spend $400 or something like that, and you didn't get lobster, you didn't get truffles, you didn't get Wagyu, you didn't get whatever, all these things where you see like a value attached to the price kind of thing.
Jeez Louise, he's
going brazy.
He's not going crazy. In my opinion, that's the wrong answer. The answer is that he's old. The answer that he's old, classically French-trained chef, maybe one of the greatest in the world, maybe the all-time biggest celebrity chef. I don't know if you want to say Batali. I think the tradition of him. I mean, there will never be anyone like him.
He
also comes from a place in a time where luxury items, regardless of what they were, it's a status symbol. Comes from a time where eating was a status symbol more than it was an experience.
Well,
and an appreciation for the subtlety didn't exist.
For an analogy inspired by our friend Jimmy from North Carolina, who just came in for your brother, for my brother's wedding.
to officiate.
Yes, he is.
Much like a Michael Jordan in his prime in the 80s and 90s, could do no wrong. And now current 2017, Michael Jordan is just kind of a crazy old guy who does kind of wrong, weird shit, right?
Yeah,
you know what 100%. I mean? He's kind of like a scumbag now.
He's always been a scumbag. It's just known that he's a scumbag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not. Yeah,
I will.
The bloom is off the rose for these guys.
I understand what you're saying about the analogy. I mean, or you're using that as an analogy, but more, I disagree with that. Not in a way that you're wrong. I just don't. That's not the point I'm making, and I don't think that. I just think that he's coming from a place in a time that what defined a restaurant in the 80s and what he cut his bones in and what made him a celebrity, if he keeps using, and I haven't heard this interview, but if he keeps using the term luxurious ingredients,
right,
that is not the point. That's like, you know, that's like buying the Bentley instead of the Tesla. I mean, that's not a good analogy. But the point is, like, he's not, he's of an era where it was, the point was not necessarily the pushing the boundaries of what food is and incorporating art into it, but what is the most expensive, finest, black truffled, rare piece of meat that I can serve, mm-hmm. where the value added is not anywhere near the experience that you get from something much more interesting and much more forward thinking. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is the rarest thing that I can find to charge these people so much that makes them think this is the only place they can get it?
It's not even that it's the most rarest. What is the most what is perceived to be the most rarest?
Or yeah, exactly. I know. I mean, on that scale of, yeah. I mean, look, this is like literally the era of lifestyles of the rich and famous.
Exactly.
I mean, like this is like yeah. yacht food.
And it's kind of like two different business models competing with each other. Like he's of the model of like, buy a very expensive ingredient that people want, charge a lot of money for it, and it works, versus try to figure out a way to take an ingredient that doesn't cost as much and elevate it to a level where you can make more of a profit margin or, and still be affordable. Kind of, like, that's the kind of thing that's a little more interesting. It's like, have an amazing dish that costs $10 to order, like at Baru or something like that, where a lot of thought goes into it and a lot of unique ingredients go into it. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's high dollar, but
look,
that's something you've never had before, and that's something that you can attach a value to without a dollar sign, kind of.
I agree with that, except that I also want to say, like, he doesn't know what his business model is. He's got 400 restaurants, 17,000 restaurants and airports, a frozen yeah. food line, a soup. I mean, like, mm-hmm. his empire, like, come on.
Yeah.
Like he, I can't imagine that he's just like looking at the numbers every week from all of his restaurants, no. going over what's going on and be like, oh, we could make more money on salad here. Like that shit's not, I mean, like that's yeah. so far gone. He's so far removed from the day to day and he should be and he deserves it. I'm not, and mm-hmm. maybe I'm wrong. I don't know him personally. But which the idea that like he's yeah. over there defending his restaurant and it's like, did he talk about in the interview how involved he is in the restaurant? Or did they ask
kind
him?
Of, yeah.
And he claimed that he was just like, I was there every day for the 4 months before opening kind of thing.
No, but he was saying that he'll go and he'll meet with the chef and kind of go over what's fresh and seasonal and what can we do with it to kind of change around the appetizers. It kind of does seem a little bit like bullshit.
I don't want to call him a liar because I don't know him and I don't think I've only heard him talk.
Well, I do know him and he's a very sweet.
No, but I've only heard him talk like, and thought he was very charming every interview I've heard and mm-hmm. I like the guy. But like, I just find it hard pressed to believe that he's as involved in the restaurant as involved defending it. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's out there just like calling out Alma and you know firing back at these critics, it's like that's fair. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious about how much actual day to day and how much involvement you had in creating what you're defending. And at the end of the day, how well do you know what you're defending to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. I don't know.
I want to know what weird shit Wolfgang Puck does with his day now that he's in his...
He just makes espresso and, like, reads a book.
I hope so.
I don't know, man.
I hope so.
Isn't he... He's, like, Austrian or German?
Yeah.
You know, German people do weird shit. We all know that.
God damn it.
Yeah, I was just listening... Maybe it was a TED Talk. Somebody was talking about how countries that have been severely attacked in wars, like... places of crazy war zone like Japan or Germany and things like that, like the generations that spawn from those disastrous events cause people to have, it seems like they on the surface level have things together, but then underneath it they're into some weird shit, like Japanese people and German people, stereotypically all of you guys.
Sure.
Huh. I wonder.
So maybe Wolfgang was around during WW2 probably, right?
He's not quite that old.
Which are old ass.
Not like as a relevant human being.
No, he
was on the front lines.
Yeah, he was a kid.
He was affected by it, I'm sure. Anyway.
Oh. Just sucking on a schnitzel.
I want to, okay, I'm going to, when this is done, I'm going to go listen to that interview, though. I'm curious now.
It is a little interesting.
I kind of, also the other side of, outside of anything that he's talking about, I like that man getting fiery in his old age.
I do, too.
Plow.
I love it when anybody who's in that position where you have to kind of be this political... politician standpoint of never really saying anything that crazy and just being very agreeable and moving things along. Whenever anybody says something that's true and honest and real like that,
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, that just kind of punches back because now you're kind of just describing our president. and how he got into it. Yeah, so
well,
because that she doesn't always pan out.
Come on, we know he's not talking about the T word.
No, I'm not you. I'm just saying, like, so you're describing somebody who's just brazen for brazen's sake because he clearly didn't do his homework and he's just talking bad about Alma because he was just because it seems like he was just misinformed. But if you didn't know that Alma went through their legal struggles and they shut down and blah blah blah, you could probably make a you could connect. That gets a decent.
That's true.
Notion to connect the dots, like, well, maybe this happened because of this. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, it didn't.
I'm just more. Sure.
He's saying in the food world too, because Jason's one of his main points he speaks very often about is how everybody's so nice in the food world, no one wants to put anybody on blast.
It's hard to. It's just the same with politics. It's really hard to.
It is hard to. But
there are direct ramifications of doing these things.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a reason why Michael Jordan didn't speak out. He had fucking a cash flow coming in that was like stopping him from doing so.
Don't fuck my money up, baby.
100%.
I need that Hanes dollar.
Yeah, Gatorade, Nike. I mean, Jesus.
Hanes dollar. Don't drop me, Raid.
Yeah.
Raid?
Yeah. Wheaties. Same diff. So, there's that.
So what have we been cooking lately, guys? Have we been working on any new dishes at home? Nibbling it up?
I've been cooking some at the restaurant. Because, giving these guys breaks, it's a lot of fun. I've been playing around in the tandoor. It's you guys should come in one day during when it in between lunch and dinner. It's pretty neat to cook.
Tell me about these tandoor plays.
I'm just not even playing around. I'm just like getting good at it.
So the tandoor, it's a big ass hot oven.
Yeah,
it looks like a trash can.
Yeah, it looks like a sure.
Walk me through the tandoor, baby.
Well, it's the reason our kitchen's so hot because we have an open air oven. You know,
how do you heat that thing? Is that charcoal?
No,
wood?
We can't. It's just that beans. It'd be so hard. It's just gas. It's gas. It's gas.
So is there flame? Is there exposed flame, or is there flame heating up the clay?
Exposed flame.
Exposed flame.
Both. Technically, you know.
So if dough fell in the middle, it would catch fire.
Yeah, I mean, you have time to scramble it. Sure. No. So if you look into the bottom, there's a ring that's about 6 to 8 inches in diameter, and it's about 4 inches up. So that if the dough fell, it could fall below it into the sides of it. So the flame goes up. So you have when you pull it out and the dough out, you have two long metal sticks, and one has an L shaped spike that you hook into it at some point, and then one is a little like a spade,
mm-hmm.
and then use that to scrape along the wall, and you pry. So it's like a And if you look in videos of tandoors popping them out, it's like I'm doing a motion right now of like flipping a pizza. And you're just like, you're basically flipping them up out of the oven. They're like flying, and there's another cat catching it and chopping it as you go. And like one guy just going all throughout the tandoor.
So sick.
Boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. And the thing that ours is, which makes sense, it's 365, but ours is in a corner. And the whole deal with the tandoor is that you can walk around the whole thing and use and constantly putting bread all around. Or having two people work the tandoor because you can. It's hard to see.
And you can't do that.
And we can't do it because we're
in the corner.
In the corner. It's just the way to. So if you have a gigantic kitchen, ideally your tandoor would be away from the wall so you can access it from all sides.
That makes sense.
And it is an arm hair scorcher.
Oh, what do you think the temp on that bad boy is?
6 billion.
It'll get well. It opens and closes, so it drops. It goes up and down.
Do you have a thermometer in there?
Oh, the thermostat on the exterior, so you get close, of course. But you know,
probably, are you doing meat?
What's
in
a reading?
Four? Yeah, everything. Oh God, it's been a while. Okay, why am I blanking? It's like 450 land.
Okay,
you know, I think. God, I'm sorry. I have to get back to you.
Because Andres Breville can do 450.
Easy.
Yeah.
That Brevi gets real toasty.
Really toasty? If you're not sticking your arm and slapping a piece of dough against the wall. Basically what I'm
You don't know me.
Yeah. Is that how you make your pizza? You slap it against the wall of your oven? Because that's basically what it's like to make a naan or a roti. So
tell me how we get the naan
it's
bread.
Funny. It's just like when I worked at I used to manage a pizza place, an Italian restaurant called Maximiliano, and seeing these trays of dough, little balls of dough, it's so similar.
Uh-huh.
You take it out and you slap it between your hands and you hit it with a little flour and then you kind of like start to stretch it, but with a pizza, you're trying to get that lip or that edge with us, you don't want to because it's not going to cook evenly. So you're trying to get it relatively flat. So I've just been watching Chef and been like picking his brain, and I use my fingers like I'm just like a little kid playing a piano, and I'm just like bashing little divots, and you're basically you're loosening it up. And so when you're touching it, you just put it on the cutting board, you just holes, divot, till like, you know, you're going crazy, and you're moving it, and then you slap it between your hands like you fold it over. I mean, I can't describe this via with my voice. What does it look like I'm doing right now, basically? You have it between your two hands, and you go side to side, and you're stretching it, but you're also shifting it.
Like you're putting your two hands together like you're going to do Down by the Banks with somebody else.
Exactly.
And then going over and under.
Mm-hmm. And you're
I mean, it's stretching it. It's a similar motion when you're working the pizza dough.
It's so much like working pizza dough, except you're just not trying to create that, a.k.a. crust, that little, like,
the lip,
half-inch lip. You just don't want to do that. Sure. That's exactly what it's like. And then you stretch it over this... it looks like a catcher's mitt. It's like a 6-inch, almost 8-inch around ball of old towels. And then you have a fresh on it. Because, like, and then on the bottom there's a knot. Like,
it sounds like a Russian insult.
Kind of. So you have something to hold on to. Mm-hmm. And then you stretch it over the towel and you slap it in there. And you start with the bottom and then you work your way up to the top. And the first few times it's terrifying, and now I'm realizing why some chefs have chef's coats that go all the way to their wrist, because you totally want you. These guys don't, but if I was working it, I would want full sleeve. If I'm working the tandoor, because then it's
like
just not
leather,
gonna,
like
not even
the
leather,
up.
Just even like standard, even like a button down shirt. When I go and I'm working the tandoor, which happens so rarely, But when I do, I my sleeves are rolled up to my elbow. I'll roll all the way down,
right,
just to protect my arm that much.
A little protection,
because it's so sketchy.
So you should be wearing like a fencing uniform, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you could, but I mean, most of these folks just wear a T-shirt, so
right.
I don't want
to
be.
And how long does it take to cook the naan in there?
If you're
60 seconds.
If you're not busy, 60 seconds. If you are busy, longer. If it's like open and closing, then it's like the
right.
temp drop. So that's it's just like you got to peek, you got to look, and you're just like really. It's so similar to cooking pizza. You're just looking for that blister.
Yep.
And then, so when you put it in...
Except the pizza's vertical.
Exactly. You slap it in, you put it on edge, and then you, with the metal stick, the skewer that has the point, you know, for the hook, you poke little holes so you don't get big old bubbles, because you want it to be
right.
like as flat as possible.
Right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
it's huge. So you're poke, and then you...
So truly an art form.
Yeah, it's truly an art form. And then you close it, and you leave it ajar... adjacent to where it is, because
the steam
air needs to get out.
Yeah,
and
the steam.
So,
yeah,
and that's
yeah.
what. So you, and if it's all the way closed and you open it, you're gonna fucking big old ball of flame too, or it'll go out.
That's why, yeah. When you're
super sketchy,
when you're doing like high heat grilling on like a Komodo oven or like a barbecue with a hard lid, you burp it. Is what the term is, where you basically like stand back, open the lid, wait 3 seconds, let air go in, because as soon as that opens. There's almost a vacuum, depending on how you have the vents sent.
100%.
That just sucks the air in and just goes poof. Like it could be a fireball if you did it the wrong time.
Sometimes I burp my rice cooker so I don't overflow the water.
I'm just waiting for that joke to come in. Just waiting for
literally burped it today. Not joking.
Wait, what?
On my rice cooker, sometimes if it's too full, the water will like bubble up like a pot over boiling.
Right.
And it'll kind of like creep some bubbles up and then like... Like gummy rice water will overflow onto my counter.
This is like this, but with your face getting burned off. Yeah. This is more like I don't want a big...
I want to keep my eyebrows.
Yeah. When we're making a cheese naan,
yeah.
How does that work? Does the cheese inside?
Yeah.
Or is the cheese outside?
No, so you...
I like cheese.
It's...
Follow-up question. Do you have any cheese?
Any cheese?
Did I do that? You... It's both.
Stupid.
It's you use the roller, a rolling pin, and you get the cheese to go throughout the knot. The cheese and the chili and the
interesting.
And
so
the cilantro.
So the cheese is marbled on the in and the out,
yeah.
All over it.
Mostly, kind of like in the middle, you know, of the actual naan itself. So you're not folding it like a quesadilla, and it's not just on the exterior. Because when we do have a rosemary naan. You do put the rosemary and you sprinkle it, and it ends up being on the top. Or if you get a garlic naan elsewhere, which we don't serve, but we do rosemary.
Yo, garlic naan's tight, dog.
Garlic naan is tight, but everybody does garlic naan.
It's so true. We get rosemary it's ubiquitous.
Naan. And we have butter chicken still. And chicken tikka masala, which is like a great tomato sauce. And rosemary naan with the butter chicken is great. It's like Italian seasoning. It's really, really good.
You got me there.
Didn't it just make good. You want to go there and eat that right now, yeah, kind of?
Yeah, I don't want to go to your stupid thing anymore. That I made all this food for. I just want to go to your restaurant and drink
stupid
beer.
Stupid ass wedding party.
And no, we could do that.
Hell no.
Well, we could do both.
Well, one someday soon you will do us the stew.
Can't
from,
wait. Cannot yeah. wait.
You guys seriously come in for lunch service? I mean, sorry, I'm telling.
I don't do it. I don't do Indian friends lunch.
On a podcast. But yeah,
I do Indian for
come
breakfast.
In and check
I love
it out.
Indian food. Mm. Yeah, I do that shit anytime.
Oh, it's just fun to cook on a thing that you never cooked with before.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's wait, will so you, fun would you to let us come to work?
Yeah, of course, dude. You guys have long arms.
So baller.
It's dude. It is such a trip. There's
can
a
I
guy,
touch the bottom?
You
can I do
you
an? Can I do an Oreo?
My grandma Pandora. Has a has one of those of gloves. Should I wear the of glove? It's good protection.
No, sure, actually. If you can have an of glove that goes all the way up to your shoulder, that'd be great.
Is ooh. That a hard no on the Oreo naan?
No, it's not a hard no. No, we'll do a we have a maybe we'll do a bon appetit and we'll put Oreos
like
and
a run,
in there.
With a runs topper.
Yeah. That'd be great. Oh, sprinkles.
Put
some Oreo in like a shaker, a salt shaker, like a Parmesan shaker, and we'll just crumble it on there.
Gangster. I would love. I cannot tell you. This is the first time you've told me that I can do that, so I'll be there next week.
It just kind of popped in my head, really. So
I cannot wait. Yeah,
why not?
Mm-hmm.
What else about that? That's about it. I mean, it's a lot of fun. Chili cheese naan is way harder to cook than a regular naan.
Oh, I'd imagine.
Roti's a bitch because roti is... so naan has... Roti's a bitch, man.
It's so thin, right?
No, it's just... It doesn't have a... binder. It doesn't have dairy or egg, so the dough is really malleable, and you can stretch the naan with your hand, so you don't need a rolling pin. And the roti, it's like whole wheat and flour, like it's super simple. It's like it's really like a Spartan.
It has no
bread.
Gluten.
There's no. It's not leavened. Mm-hmm. And that's the deal. There's gluten because it's wheat, but it's just not a leavened dough, so it's not malleable. So you have to do each one. With a rolling pin. So if you have a table that has, you know, a bunch of curries and like five rotis, you basically like, mother, you just like curse yourself and you like knock out this roti. And it is hard to do. And it's trickier because it's so simple, if you overcook it by that, like the threshold for doneness is tricky. Mm. It gets hard like that. And then some people like it.
I have a suggestion. Remove roti from your menu.
Honestly, I feel you. But I think the... I don't want to say. Actually, yeah, the brothers would be like, "Yeah, we could do that," but Papa's like, "No, it's like we've got to keep, you know, something's got to be."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Respect. It just wouldn't be right if we didn't have the roti.
And with certain dishes, it really goes. When Indian people come in, they get the dal makhani, the lentils, and dude, it's like always with roti. It's something about roti and like the veggie dishes.
Makes sense.
Just always go well together, and it's really good. But then again, chili cheese naan with lentils, as Jason's had, is like. Almost like a bean and cheese burrito.
Mm.
Confirmed.
It's super good.
So put a that. Little yogurt on there.
Yeah. All right.
A little Del Scorcho.
Yeah. Yeah. Smoke some Scorcho in.
Yeah. Reveal a packet from your breast pocket of your dress shirt.
Meals.
I won't have to remember to do that. It's always on me, baby. I'm holding Caulfield over here. It's always on me.
It's on your keychain.
I think last time I was talking about making sopes with bone marrow in it.
Sure.
And I did it. You and it didn't work very well. it worked well, but you couldn't really taste the bone marrow.
Right.
It didn't offer any new flavors or
it's a battle.
Or richness, which was sad. And I've learned that I'm now very good at making sopes.
That's awesome.
But sopes aren't that, I don't know, man.
They're gut bomb, dude.
They're kind of they're real greasy. And they're kind of just, I don't know. But it's kind of magical how they all come together.
Did you get marrow bones from, like, Whole Foods? How'd you do the marrow?
Yeah, I just got one marrow bone from Whole Foods. It cost, like, $2. Nothing. And roasted it in the oven for half an hour, scooped it out, put the marrow in mortar and pestle and smushed it up until it was just an emulsified chunk of fat. And then whisked that in with some masa flour and some water and salt. And then cooked it up.
So it was good, but it just didn't warrant the work because you couldn't.
If you didn't know that there was bone marrow in it, you would never guess that there was bone marrow in it. And it was kind of. And then I made a regular sope with, and then I got like a big scoop of the bone marrow and put it on top, and it just kind of like didn't really do that much.
But that's like, see, that goes back to my crazy, regrettable rant about like ingredients and restaurants and menus and.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't make any sense for me to really complain about that, but I did. But that's the kind of thing that you'd be like, bone marrow is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be like, meh. Because you had a bunch of bone marrow left over each night from whatever prep you did for the restaurant. So you're like, oh, we'll throw bone marrow in it, call it bone marrow sope. And half the people be like, really, that bone marrow hits hard. It's really nice.
Well, sometimes I've had dishes where the bone marrow sings really nicely. And it is the home run part of the dish. And I've had it other times where you don't know.
I'm not a big bestie head, but the bone marrow bestie was great.
Yeah, that's a prime example. The bone marrow dish at Bestia, it's
super good.
It's pretty damn good.
It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. No church and state.
It's tough. It's tough.
Oh, yeah. I got it. Yeah. Or sneaky, the best bone marrow outside of Bestia was when we were in Tijuana and we went to the birthplace of the Caesar salad. That.
Yeah.
It's still my favorite. One of my favorite memories.
That was my inspiration of the bone marrow sope.
Oh, claro que sí.
Claro que sí, Wayne.
Es verdad.
But now I'm really very good at making, but instead I pushed the sope as far as I could. I just make it with just the masa flour, water, salt, and then I'll put in some
Bob's Red Mill
green
Bojangles seasoning.
No, that's my favorite masa.
Yeah.
Bob's Red Mill.
The masa so simple. Harina, whatever. And then when you mix it with water, it really creates like this odd like foam rubber like consistency. Like when you mix the flour and the water, it almost aerates and becomes lighter than it was before.
So are you doing a sope mold where it's got like the little cup in it?
Mm-hmm.
The little divot?
You form it.
So you got a little thing.
It looks when mom would make, or you would buy the packets of like strawberry shortcake. That little lip.
So and I started I would get like a green onion, dice that up, and then I mix the green onion in with the mixture, so there's kind of green onion all throughout it.
Yeah.
And then you form it into a patty. You can just do it, fold over a piece of plastic wrap, put like a golf ball size in there, and then you smush it out.
Like a tea plate or like a little thing? Like, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's
smart. And then you hit it on a dry grill pan or like a cast iron or something like that for like a minute on each side. So you'll just cook it dry, a minute on each side. Cooks it for the most part.
Both sides?
What?
Both, right, top and bottom, with the lip. Funny.
With the lip?
If you let me finish.
Listening.
And then you remove the sope from the hot grill pan, let it cool down for 10 seconds, and then you form the lip.
I like this.
Afterwards, and then you do a shallow fry, about a minute on both sides, and then it's done.
You don't ever cover it and steam it during any of this, like a pot sticker?
No,
or like tint it, you know, like water.
Like, yeah, I was thinking that too. Like you would like put it on with some oil, get that bottom real nice and crispy, and then like do a little tablespoon of water, put a cup on top, let it steam underneath, and then
makes sense too, though.
This is the traditional way that sope is made.
I've never done it.
You form them just into like a thick tortilla, then you dry cook just like you would do a tortilla. Remove it, and while it's still malleable and hot, then you form the lip around the edge, and then you do a shallow fry. And then when you fry it after it's already been cooked on the grill, then it's a little less susceptible to absorbing oil, but it still is just a oil bomb, which is a bummer.
Requires a lot of oil.
And then I made it, and I was like, all right, it tastes good. I got it tasting as good as it's ever going to taste. And then I made this shaved fennel guacamole crema slaw. It looked really good, and I ate it, and it fucking tasted like shit. I just gave up.
That's a lot of work.
That's the way it goes, man.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. I'm not feeling it.
That's why there's like one person that makes those at a restaurant. It's like, okay, you're on this station.
And but then I started thinking about other things. I started one of the best tacos I've ever had in my life. The first time I went to Mexico to DJ like 10 years ago or something like that, I got a fried oyster chicharrón taco.
Damn, that sounds
just
incredibly
fried
good.
Oyster chicharrón taco.
So it was like a regular, like a real rustic corn tortilla, like three fried oysters in there, and then some pieces of chicharrón in there, and then it's kind of dressed like a fish taco, maybe like now a little bit of cabbage and a little crema and some salsa.
Is the chicharrón awesome. Like the packaged chicharrons or like the fresh made where there's like little pieces of like, yeah, there's like a little bit of flesh on
and
it.
Some and hair on there.
A little bit of both.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Those are gnar.
And it tasted amazing.
Yeah.
And I was looking it up and there wasn't really that much online. It's an obvious pairing of oysters and pork.
Yeah.
And I didn't really see much online. And then I was thinking the fried oyster, whenever you get it, it's usually like a cornmeal dusted, mm-hmm. or like you hit it in flour, then an egg wash, and then cornmeal or something like that.
Something.
You fry it for a minute and it's done. And then I was thinking, get the oyster, hit it in the masa flour, egg wash, and then pork rinds in the food processor into a breadcrumb and rolling it in that and then frying, which I haven't tried yet, but I'm going to try tomorrow. Do you guys think that will work? And then I learned that there's a whole world.
I think it's certainly worth trying, if you're asking. But what were you saying?
I was wondering, like, will the chicharrón just burn up and die in the fryer? But then
maybe
I was doing maybe some not. Research, and there's a whole market of like low carb, paleo, Atkins people where you replace breadcrumbs with ground up pork rinds, and it's a thing. Like, you can just go on Amazon and buy a bag of powdered pork rinds that are breadcrumb substitutes.
That's funny.
It's funny you mentioned about breadcrumb substitutes because I was trying to think of a gluten-free version of that. I'm sure there's a million, mm-hmm. but off the top of my head, I was trying to think of something kind of interesting, and I was wondering, like, blending puff rice or, like, rice crackers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and seeing, because I wanted to make a meatloaf, but the person I wanted to eat it with is gluten-free. And I was like, okay, so breadcrumbs, can't do a bunch. Do you guys think that just blending up some nice rice crackers would probably be decent enough and just use the same proportion?
What if you also did, you could try that. I would go brown versus white. Mm-hmm. It's more analogous to the flavor of bread.
Yeah,
but good point. If you toasted some chickpeas,
ew.
That would work. Because we use chickpea flour a lot for things. And we have like a fried catfish. Everyone just assumes it's got gluten, but we use chickpea flour instead, and it's gluten free, and it's really good.
Yeah, but cornmeal is a different texture than breadcrumb.
100%.
But I what
no chickpea, saying. Not corn, chickpea.
No. But I'm saying like if you're saying like if you're doing catfish in something, and they think it's a breading, they probably think it's like cornmeal.
But it's cornmeal, but with chickpea. Yeah, if you're gonna do a batter for some sort of even like.
But cornmeal is already gluten free, right?
Right. Yeah, but it's not just corn. Wouldn't you add cornmeal and a flour a lot of time for?
What if you get some corn tortillas, like some nice guisados, rustic tortillas? Hit them in the food processor, make some breadcrumbs out of that.
Want a neutral flavor though.
No, but what you guys are missing or not missing, but the reason why I always like using panko is because it does the job in the same amount with less breading. But it does kind of the same filling. It makes a better texture, a lighter texture.
Yeah.
The panko is the scrub daddy of the food world. It sucks it up like a damn sponge.
So if you're blending like toasted chickpeas, or if you're using like a guisado's tortilla, it's going to be dense. It's going to be like an old school breadcrumb your grandma used to get like in the carton. That's just like straight up. Might as well just be like flour.
It's like gunpowder.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Just a can full of BBs.
So that's why I thought like rice crackers would be.
I think that's a good idea.
Closer to what panko would be than something else.
Yeah, rice
I like the rice cracker.
Or something dehydrated.
Yeah,
would be good because that's then what you have the pores. So that's what. Yeah, like you know, I said chickpeas again, but yeah, chickpeas.
I'm doing it. Yeah, I'm gonna try this. Good. I'm gonna try my meatloaf recipe with rice crackers. Stand by.
And that's readily available, so that's easy.
Yeah, it's very easy.
Boom, you pulse it in the food processor, and bam, bam.
I've been thinking about doing a meatloaf, but an al pastor meatloaf.
It sounds great. 100%.
Where you get all the al pastor marinade, like you blend
pineapple
all the
juice
the and chilies and the pineapple juice and all that stuff, and you mix it into that slurry of brownness, mix that in with your ground pork.
Whatever you're doing, I would cook it off first.
Cook what off?
The pineapple, anything wet. Onions, garlic, anything that's going to release water, want to cook. You don't want to put like pureed pineapple in there.
Negative
raw.
Space thing going on.
You're just going to release a bunch of water, and it's not going to hold the texture.
Yeah.
So if you want to do al pastor, that's I think it's great. I can't wait to try it. But I would whatever mixture you're using, cook off. So onions, garlic, pineapple, whatever chilies, whatever.
And
else
once
you're
again,
doing,
what if you just
get that real reduced?
Wicked smart.
Remember, so at Mother's we used to get or mostly at Mom we get these dehydrated pineapple rings. So if you blasted those and chopped them real fine and threw them in there, and then all the water's gone because you're just dehydrated.
Blast them.
That could be good. Because I think that it'd be cool to get like a little bite of pineapple and a. Al pastor,
just a little fruit by the foot hit.
That could be cool.
I agree.
Well, you're right. Okay. The moisture.
Yeah, no, it'll like that's the.
Isn't it so weird that like when you make like a turkey meatloaf or a turkey meatball, you add extra onions so there is moisture, but then with a less dry meat, you want to cook it off to remove that.
Isn't it crazy, guys? I only kind of add raw onion for my turkey burgers.
Right.
And the meatloaf, I'll cook off the onion. But yeah.
That's good. Do a blend. You give it a turkey pork blend.
Ew.
Ew.
That's crazy. That reminds me of the turducken question. The pig, that cow.
Yeah.
The turducken, but you just put a pig inside of a cow.
Oh, yeah.
That was Nikki's question, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, do we have any questions this week?
Still want to try that. Didn't ask if we had any questions. But that's okay. But we can talk about the best thing that we had all week because it's that time of the day. Okay. I'll start things off. Last weekend was Easter. Shout outs to Jesus.
The Resurrector. The original Resurrector.
The original Resurrector. And... the best thing that I had was the classic bunny cake that my mom made.
Oh, it was so cute. I wasn't there, but it's
cute.
Shout
out.
The bunny cake, it's you get a cake, a round sheet cake. That's the bunny face. And then you get another round sheet cake, and then you cut that into ears and, like, bunny shoulder, some shoulder meat.
No, a bow tie.
Bow tie. And then
it looks like a bow tie.
Frosted up. She used like a funfetti style cake, which is obviously the best cake you can get. And then there's like a coconut buttercream frosting. Just
coconut,
like
shredded coconut.
Shredded coconut. So like
it's like analogous to the fur of a bunny.
Analogous to the fur of a bunny.
It is.
That's right. And I don't even like cake.
Same.
And I ate two pieces. I ate one piece and then another.
I'm realizing that literally when it comes to cake, I mostly just like it when we're at our mom's house. And then
Mommy,
I house it.
There's a lot of deep grained nostalgia in our DNA of just like eating some cake when it's cake time.
Yeah, like double dipping when it's cake time.
Andre, when it's cake time, you eat that fucking cake, all right?
I will. I don't like cakes at all.
Neither do I. Don't care about cake.
I so rarely order cake.
Every day I go to Proof Bakery and I look at the cake and I'm like, damn, that's a good looking cake. Never going to eat it.
Oh, fun fact, Cozy Kitchen, Adriana Darme is making our wedding cake.
That's incredible.
What's the
cool.
cake going to be?
Pistachio strawberry, tentatively. She's been making these beautiful frostings with gradients. So I think it might be like a red and green gradient frosting.
Gradient?
Yeah, because I guess...
Sounds like a Christmas frosting.
Sorry to sidebar, but I guess... In France, wedding cakes aren't white. They're usually some sort of colorful thing. Not like always extravagant, but like yellow or something, you know? Not just like an atypical, perfectly...
Classic green. French.
Yeah.
It's not trying to reflect the virginity of the bride as well as the white of the dress as well as the purity of the ceremony and both people involved.
No.
We say no to cake blanc.
Blanc. Blanc.
Cake blanc. So yeah, shout out. That was mom's first best thing we ate all week. Wow. She's probably doing the dishes right now, listening to this and being like, hell yeah.
Nailed it.
Fucking got that one.
She's
good.
Like, sick. My son is married now.
Don't make this about you. This is about the best thing I ate all week.
This week Stewie, is all about me.
Drop that.
Serious marriage tangent.
I guess best thing you ate all the last 3 months since
you've
been on the show.
Yeah, 3 months to go back.
This better be freaking good.
All right, this is a sweet one, and it's really good. So Jason gets this when he comes into Bad Mesh, and I haven't had it since I started, but I forget that it's like one of my favorite things on the menu. And I'm not working till Monday, so I was like, well, what do I get? What am I going to miss? Like, I should get something because I'm not going to eat this food that I eat every fucking day. And one of the
you have Stockholm syndrome now.
And one of the cooks there is like, well, duh, dude, get the wedding chicken, the butter chicken. You're about to get married. I was like, that is a good idea. So I got chili cheese naan and butter chicken, and it is crazy how tender and simple and delicate that shit is. You got to come in and try it.
I can't wait.
It's so good. I just talked to Jason before we started. He's like, yes, duh, it's my favorite thing on the menu. Like, I always forget to get it. I usually just eat lentils and rice because I'm there every day, so I should eat somewhat sensibly. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm getting married, I can go all hog wild and eat poutine and butter chicken.
Yeah, is that for Indian people? Is that considered like basic food 101? Like, is it looked down upon as like an entry level cuisine?
No, I think it's like just like home cooking, you know?
Right.
Like, we just talked for 2 minutes about meatloaf. It's like, I mean, if you see meatloaf on a menu, it's like, it is and it isn't, you know? Like, if you nail it and it's really good, it's like, and you walk through India, you're like, and you're in America, you grew up in India, you want home cooking. Like, our traditional menu is, like, totally home cooking. Like, it's, a lot of the recipes come from what mom used to make, their mother, Anu, used to make it. She's the sweetest lady. And they're just really simple. And the other side of the menu are you know,
it's what you want, modern, what you're craving for.
But yeah, if you're coming in and you know,
peanut butter and jelly is what you're saying.
Yeah, you haven't been home in a while and you want some home cooking. Yeah, you get the butter chicken and you're just like, God, that hit the spot.
Peanut butter and jelly on naan, by the way. Something to think about.
Yeah, well.
Sounds great.
Andre, best thing you ate all week?
I don't know about best thing I ate all week, but it was really good.
We went to Hamlet's. And that was so good.
Yeah, that was incredible.
I was going to say, that was...
That was probably the best thing I ate all week, but I think everything that already said is the best thing I ate that week. Mm-hmm. But the way they brought that whole platter out and we just posted up like kings,
it
was a really fun afternoon.
Yeah, hung out those two...
hey, thanks for doing it with me. It was great.
Pleasure's all
thanks
mine.
Thanks for being my bud.
Anytime, baby.
No, but so you had it too. I don't know the best thing I ate, but I've been trying to find a nice recipe for this for a while. And it's like a Taiwanese meat sauce, or what some Chinese restaurants will call like Korean beef. But it's a really simple meal that you can do with any ground meat, but traditionally it's ground pork. But it was like a quarter cup, it was a pound of meat, quarter cup soy sauce, quarter cup brown sugar, some dark soy sauce, some fish sauce, some Chinese black vinegar,
and
a little Chinese five spice.
Sesame oil.
And then just like some chopped jalapeno and chopped red pepper, and then just that sauteed in the wok. And it's kind of like that classic, really nice, comforty food, just over noodles or over white rice, nothing fancy, then a little scallion on top.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't made one that I was really happy with, and I've been trying to kind of find one, and I feel like I nailed it last night with a little stir-fried rice. It was great.
I ate dinner that night, and I ate that as well because it was that good. I had two dinners because that's how good it was.
But it also is super cheap and it came together in like 20 minutes and it's like one of those nice like back pocket.
If you have all that stuff in your cabinet
If you have that in the cupboard and you got some ground meat, it's like it's such an easy thing to just kind of...
But did
it's really enjoyable.
Did it make you want to get a wok that has crazy BTU heat power?
I mean, that means I need a new... either range or I need to have like a standalone something, you know, like that link I sent you guys didn't respond to.
Yes, I did.
We it both
not true at all.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see
yeah,
it.
I was like, wow, what a great deal. It's only 60 bones.
We both responded to it.
Yeah.
That's a
So you just get $60 and it's a gas propane burner that you put a wok underneath it.
You need a wok and then you need, obviously, you have to buy like the $50 thing of gas from Home Depot that you can then refill cheaper.
The propane accessories?
Yeah.
Damn it, Bobby.
Yeah, but I want to know how hot it gets.
That is very pop-up friendly.
It is.
Dude, and then I said, you need to read your text messages because I said,
I was at the gym.
It's time for us to do another pop-up. It sounds really good.
Oh, I thought that. Okay, I thought that was a reference to something else.
No. So listeners at home.
I just had an anxiety attack.
I don't know what I'm thinking.
Follow me on social media at themjeans.
Don't ever say the P word again.
Andre Canaparo has no social media because he's cool or a dork. Don't know yet.
Dork.
Stewie is at Stewie Stewart.
One or the other. Stu Stewart.
Stu Stewart. Just remember themjeans. TallTalesPodcast.com is the website. We're at. Find us on YouTube. We're not on YouTube. See you guys next week.
Bye-bye.